Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hi.
Hey.
Well, this is kind of hard to say. We've been through so much together.
Yep, sure have.
I'm staying.
Yeah, I had a feeling.
I guess this is it.
Yep. Well, that baby's gonna be really lucky to have you.
And those rebels are so lucky to have you.
I need you to take care of yourself, okay?
Okay. Cross my heart.
Okay.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to our podcast. I'm Daphne.
And I'm Wendy.
And I'm Jason.
And this is House Podcastica, The Handmaid's Tale Edition.
This week, we're covering The Handmaid's Tale, Season 4, Episode 5, Chicago.
We're halfway through. You believe that?
No, I don't want it to end, but I want to get to the next episode.
I know, especially after this one.
Yeah.
How do we do it? Like, I want to get to the next one. This one, oh, so much to talk about. As with every week, I feel like there's always something for us to dive into. At least it's not milk this time.
And I'm glad the episode, I was really hoping this season would feel different because season two in some ways felt a little samey with one, if I remember right. And even three, like I really felt like I'd like to see this show kind of shift gears. And it really is, I feel like, this season. And even within episode to episode, they're quite different. And I like that.
Yeah, me too. I agree. I like the difference in feel. Mm-hmm. This one, I feel like it changes throughout the episode. Like I might feel like things are really bleak and then I start to have hope again.
And then all of a sudden you get bombed.
Yeah. It's like, oh, yeah. There's a lot of unexpected things that happen in this show, too, that I really love because it seems like they're very thoughtful. You. Yeah. They shock you. You don't know what's coming. Mm-hmm. So now, whenever I watch it, I just sit back and think I have no idea what's going to happen. Because even if you think you know the way the story's going to go, they shock you. They trip you up. And in the end, you're just left with your mouth hanging open, like, what have I watched?
Yeah, that's so true. And I always love that when TV shows can do that and do it in a way that still makes sense. It doesn't feel gimmicky like Sopranos always did that to me. I never knew what to expect on that show. And I love that. And Lost.
Yeah, too. I remember that. Yeah, Sopranos was definitely one for that because I thought I knew so many times and it twisted it around.
Especially the last couple seasons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The action was nonstop.
Mm-hmm. When it was getting near the end, I feel like they were.
Mm-hmm.
No one was safe.
Nope.
And right. You just didn't know. And I liked that being on edge a little bit, but in some ways too, it was just a little bit like, oh, but I don't want anything to happen to that character.
It's good when you're watching shows like Handmaid's Tale or any of these harsh shows to have a palate cleanser show to go to afterwards, a comedy or something, you know?
Mine is Cobra Kai.
Yeah, that's so good. That. That's why yeah. I feel like Cobra Kai fits so well in the whole podcastica oeuvre, because it brings joy to your heart where all this, it kind of heals all this darkness.
Yeah, I'm actually trying to ration them because I'm pretty deep into season two, and then I only have season three left.
Season three is so good.
Yeah, I felt that way about Schitt's Creek.
Yeah,
Schitt's Creek's probably my go-to show now, just to get something that is just kind of irreverent, I guess, and fun and silly and well done and, you know, really great, well-rounded show. And it's one I put off watching for such a long time. So
I still haven't seen that. I need to get on it.
You do. It's a good one. I didn't understand what all the fuss was about until I was about three or four episodes in. And it was like, oh, I get it. Similarly, that's what I felt when I was watching The Handmaid's Tale for the first time, which was just back in March. I didn't understand all the fuss. I knew it was well done. It got a lot of accolades, but I didn't get the fuss. Once I started getting into it, I totally was on board at that point. So I feel like we should probably jump into our top three highlights. Who wants to go first this week?
I'll go first.
All right.
Number three is Chicago. I think I've talked about this before, how I love that things that were just mentioned briefly in the novel, they turn into whole episodes here in the series. It's just wonderful. And the novel, yeah, the novel is really full of a lot of references to the front and the war. And you imagine what that would be like in this dystopian world, you know, this other world that we haven't seen yet. And here we get to see Chicago. We see the Chicago skyline. And I just love that we got to go to Chicago and see what it was like. I loved that whole scene. Chicago is a war zone that doesn't appear to be controlled by any one group. It appears that the city has been at war for a long time. And I think part of the reason for that is that, you know, Chicago is on the Great Lakes, so people can boat in and out, which probably makes it a really great way to get to Canada or to bring shipments of arms or supplies or anything else from Canada. So the city appears to have been at war for a long time. Everywhere they go, there's burnt out buildings, places that look like they've been bombed, rubble, graffiti. You see fresh fires burning in the distance, lots of smashed cars. And then we do, while we're following Steven's group, we do hear and see what appears to be helicopters and soldiers from Gilead. Steven's group is just surviving. They're being super careful. They aren't really going out of their way to fight with other groups or to fight the soldiers. But Steven tells June of a group called the Nighthawks that are actively fighting Gilead soldiers.
Because they see a bunch of dead ones.
Yes. And June immediately wants into this group. She's ready to fight in this city. I think that's why she came there. And so I just really loved the appearance of Chicago. I really liked the scene where June is hiding under a car because she hears somebody in the background, and you could hear and see the wind, which I thought was a really nice touch, being Chicago's being the windy city. Mm-hmm. So, and you could see Janine's hair blowing in the wind, and just the attention to detail in this show is amazing. And I loved seeing these scenes of Chicago.
Yeah, that scene in particular, I thought, was done so well because she's by herself. And I guess it's during this ceasefire, although I don't know if June even knows that because we didn't see them learn about it. But anyway, it's like a ghost town. And it just feels really eerie all of a sudden. Now, because it's Handmaid's Tale, you're like, oh, crap, something bad could happen. So she hides under the car, and then you see Janine. Hi! Which is really fun. But just the whole feel of being on the war front, like I found it particularly striking in the beginning when June's in bed and guns and bombs start going off outside, and she gets up to look around, and I think it's Steven or one of the guys is like, hey, it's not safe, get back in bed. So it's just like, I guess that's what you do on the war front. You just go to bed and hope you don't get bombed.
Yeah.
Try to sleep through all the gunfire. And then as far as all the rubble goes, it kind of, it's like World War II Europe or something, you know, we really haven't had that experience here in the United States. And I hope we never do, where our cities can be war torn like that. But that's what it's like.
It gave me a very World War II vibe. Mm-hmm. And I wondered if it was like that when they were bombing like the United Kingdom, and you'd hear air horns and people would try to get to shelter. And, you know, what do you do if it happens all the time? I mean, you must just lay down and just be like, okay, well,
just hope for it could happen.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think, is it The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe? Is these kids are moved to one of their relatives' farms to try to just get out of the city while the war is going on?
That's real. They moved a lot of kids out of the cities because of that in London. And it's such a polar opposite of what we see in Boston with all of the, in typical Gilead, everything is really in order. Everything's very uniform. So it's really something completely different than what we're used to seeing in this show.
I posted a YouTube video to, our Facebook page, facebook.com/podcastica, that shows one guy speculating on the map. You know, he got a hold of a production image of a more detailed map of the United States and all the different fronts and areas and where exactly the colonies are. I guess it's the Southwest. And so if you want to check that out, it's pretty interesting. People listening.
Great.
Yeah, I haven't taken a look at that. I kind of need to. Maps and geography are something that I'm really into, so I've got to check that out. Because I did notice at one point in the show, they were talking about the ceasefire in Chicago, Texas, and California. That's what it sounded like.
Those are
like
the fronts, yeah.
So, I'm going to have to take a look at that.
Yeah, so we had figured out or been told before that Texas may have seceded, and so now apparently that they're still at war with Gilead. So Gilead's trying to, they're calling all these people insurgents, so they're trying to claim all of the United States, I imagine.
Yeah, and when you're having a front right on your own borders, that makes it really hard to secure your own country. So
yeah. Well, I'll go next with my number three, which is Lydia is back. Basically, we see her in such... She looks different than when we saw her at the beginning of the season, where she wasn't... She still was suffering the effects.
She was all bruised.
Yeah. She was all beaten up. We see her walking on the treadmill, and she's kind of in this aunt recovery home, or I feel like it was more like a residential care facility for aunts to go to
retired
live out the
aunts.
Rest of their days.
Yeah, that's what I called it, the retired aunt's home.
Right. And I was thinking, like, you know, it's been noted that you don't see a lot of elderly people around Gilead, and we've wondered, oh, do they get shipped off to the colonies or something? But I imagine if you're in good stead, then you'll probably go to a place like this where they expect you to just play cards with your friends for the rest of your time.
It's a much easier life than what Lydia was doing on the outside.
But she's not one to rest. She has a purpose.
No. And she sees those handmaids outside, and she's just salivating,
dying to go down there and harass them.
She is. She can't wait to get out there. Like, she wants to be out there. And she talks with Aunt Ruth, who, interestingly enough, the actress that played Aunt Ruth was Jean Ann Goosen, and she was in an episode of The Walking Dead. She was one of the saviors in that outpost that I think it was Carol and Maggie were in.
Oh, with all women episode?
So Aunt Ruth is just trying to say, they're not your concern anymore. I admire your devotion when you were active, but now it's your time to rest. Ruth doesn't care what Lydia wants. She just is like, you're going to stay here. And what that led me to question is, after everything that's happened, first June getting away and being brought back, then the handmaids disappearing, then they get come, then they come back, and then, you know, there are two of them were for sure hit by a train. Two were shot. I assume they died as well. At what point does Lydia really get punished?
Well, that's the thing, is that she doesn't get punished because of what she knows.
Yeah, that that could be a big part of it.
Yeah.
They told her she wouldn't get punished because of her frailty, but that seems like a BS answer. Clearly, she's not frail.
She's playing the game.
And they don't care if people are frail.
Yeah. Either, so. And she's staying important and she's staying in power by playing this politics game.
Game of Thrones style.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's all based on the things that she knows.
Oh, and she knows a lot, as we learn later in the episode, when she goes to see Commander Lawrence and basically tries to blackmail him. And I loved his response to it, you know, basically, well, what else do you got?
Yeah, he Bring used the on. Situation to his advantage.
He flipped it around because he knew she had information that would help him get a seat at the table to do more of what he wants to do.
And her being willing to play that game is also what keeps her alive, because otherwise, well, if she knows too much, then somebody would just kill her. But they don't, because they can use her and she's using them. Yeah. So she's a, you know, she's a chess piece in the, in the, on the board, and they're all using each other.
I thought it was a little soap opera-ish, but I guess it was intriguing. I mean, she said she had seen witnesses or had witnesses that he might have some involvement in Commander Winslow's death. And so I was like, okay, what happened? Well, he drove June to Jezebel's.
Yep.
And I forget why she wanted to go there. Something to do with her plan to get the kids out
of Gilead. She needed to talk to the bartender.
Yeah.
To get the plane.
To get the plane, yeah. And so she ended up running into Winslow there, who tried to have sex with her, and she killed him. And then the handmaid, or the Marthas or the handmaids at Jezebel's, took care of his body. So the only thing that Joseph Lawrence had to do with it was he drove her there and then drove her home. So I guess maybe someone could have seen him there, and I feel like it's a bit of a stretch to
make the connection. I think he was less worried about what she had on him and more interested in what she could do for him.
Yeah.
I mean, he also mentioned black market dealings and which we know he was
conspiring with June.
Yeah.
To get the kids out of Gilead.
Maybe he's already in trouble for all that stuff. So
yeah. I just think that Lydia overall went from being this beaten up husk of a woman into this, well, I'm not going to take any prisoners, and I'm just going to throw things at the wall, find out what sticks and roll with it, because it's going to keep me alive. And in a lot of ways, it reminds me of Survivor. And how people just manipulate each other to do what they want, because it's like a game. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe, I feel like they get caught up in the game too. Like, I got to get rid of this person, and how do I do this? And some of it's very similar to me.
I mean, we haven't seen this kind of thing with her before. So I felt like that's what I think part of what made it feel a little soap opera-ish to me. Because I think the point was just to get for Lydia and Lawrence to get their status back, which they did. They were successful, but it felt a little bit out of nowhere to me that she would start playing this kind of a game. Maybe I'm not remembering other things that she's done like this.
I think she's definitely been playing this game for a while. And for her, I think it's not enough. Yes, part of the reason why she's playing this is because she wants to survive, but that's not enough for her. She wants power.
Yeah.
She wants to be in a position of power and influence.
I mean, I just thought she just wants to get back into her position that she feels is her role, which is an aunt. Mm-hmm. I mean, when she was an aunt, I don't think we really saw her trying to go above that, you know? She just wants, she's devout. She believes in Gilead's mission. So it's not like she's like some of these other commanders who are just BSing about all of that and just using it to get power for themselves. To me, I think she really believes in the mission of godliness and, you know, whatever Gilead is trying to do. I could be wrong. I don't know. That's just what I thought. She just wants to be an aunt again.
I do think too, though, that she, there's a part of her that does care about these girls, even in the least.
Yeah.
Bit.
Oh yeah. That she thinks it's about caring. She thinks her whole mission is about caring.
Yeah. She's deluded herself into thinking that she cares about them.
Hear Anne, what's her name?
Anne Dowd.
Dowd talk about her character. She's like most actors. They try to have sympathy because, you know, she'll say if you come in judging, then you can't really play the character well. So she tries to find her reasoning for it. And I'm sure it's in her mind about doing what's best for humanity and all that.
Yeah, I do. I agree. I think she does have it. I mean, she thinks she's doing the right thing.
Yeah.
It's not the right thing. And I think
she's wrong.
When June like snaps back at her and says, "You sent us to be raped and all of these things," I think Lydia tries to not think about it in that way.
Or think of it as like a necessary
part of the puzzle.
Oh, yeah, I guess you're right. She wouldn't think of it as rape. She would think of it as performing your godly duty or whatever.
Yes. Yeah.
About Lydia, I had just a couple things about it. One is, I mean, even when she was bruised up, she's never been broken.
No.
I don't think.
No, I don't think so.
She's,
no.
Even when she almost got beaten to death by Emily, I mean, she was physically broken, but never mentally, never her spirit. And in that scene where she was, the first scene with her this season, approaching the council, one of her concerns was that she got to, that June is a problem. And here, same thing. She's like, okay, and all her wheeling and dealing, one of her conditions is, I want to make sure to be the one to take care of June if she comes back. And I'm like, oh crap, is she gonna get captured again? This seems like another foreshadowing, you know?
We've talked about this. We don't want any more of this. We don't. I'm not a fan of that.
Yeah, we'll see what happens, but it is interesting to me. I mean, I think she does think what she's doing is the right thing, and you know, maybe it's according to her religion and all that, but I do feel like she has a particular obsession with June, and that's a revenge motive, maybe.
Yeah.
And other things, I was wondering where these new, because they're talking about the new crop of handmaids, and I'm like, where do these new handmaids come from? Because we know all the handmaids we've seen before were sinners, quote unquote, before Gilead. So are the new ones just new, who have newly sinned after the formation of Gilead, or what?
I think we've seen that Gilead chooses when it's convenient for sinners to be brought in. And I was thinking that these are probably Econo wives or Econo wives' children. Mm-hmm. And we need some more handmaids. So
change
let's,
the rules up or go round up some more and make up reasons. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, remember, was it Omar and his wife was taken after he was hung on the wall and made to be a handmaid. So I wonder are there other people who are in that same position that have just been, you know, taken? I mean, they could have been watched for how long? And Gilead may just be thinking, well, you know, we don't need them yet, so let them go about their lives and we'll just go in and swoop in and get them when we need to.
I mean, we've seen, I guess it doesn't, it's getting a little nitpicky if you examine it too much, but my thought is, okay, they went and took Emily and Janine out of the colonies because they were short on handmaids. So that seemed to suggest to me that they don't have a huge supply that they can get easily. But anyway, I could see everything you guys are saying makes a lot of sense about the Econowives and stuff.
And I also think they're fighting wars on several fronts. If there's right. any women that are captured there, I'm sure they're shipped to either colonies or the wall or handmaidens, depending on their fertility status, of course.
Yeah. The last thing I was wondering, I meant to go back and listen again, but did, you know, Aunt Lydia was on this treadmill that had a like voice to it. And I think it said blessed day, did it?
It did.
So they programmed it.
That was
Gilead
one of my
speak.
Notes. I thought that was the funniest thing ever.
It's considering they're not big on technology, really. I figure it might be the last thing they did. Oh, last one out. Make sure you reprogram the treadmill and all the, all of our workout gear. Let's get that taken care of.
It
oh
said,
my gosh.
Workout paused. Blessed day.
Oh my goodness.
This is great.
I missed that. So now I'm going to have to go back.
Yeah.
And listen
to
it.
I
want
to program that into
it.
my treadmill. Yeah. Right over there.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Okay, so my number three is Janine and June's sort of relationship. And I think it was unsettling to me, but interesting to think about Janine kind of going with the flow with Steven, like acting like she's his girlfriend, this guy who's in charge of this group of resistance group. And he's kind of acting like a boyfriend, teaching her how to shoot in this flirty way that you see in romantic comedies, you know? And it's unsettling given that this is the same guy who last week gave them an ultimatum of either having sex with him or being ejected out into the war front. And so, but I think this kind of thing reflects how we all sort of put up with shit sometimes and try to convince ourselves it's okay. I think I know I've had an experiences like that where I find myself in a situation and realize, you know what? What am I doing? You know, like that. So I don't know. But also last week I was saying it's one of Janine's strengths that she's an optimist and she can find joy even if in the face of all these horrible things that have happened. But maybe this is the downside of that, where she has rose colored glasses and she's impulsive and acts based on her naivete. Like she, you know, thought Commander Warren was going to run away with her and raise their baby together. And, you know, now she's saying she wants to become pregnant again and I can be a mom. And I'm like, yeah, in the middle of a war zone with this guy who, you know, extorts sex from women. So it's like, come on, think, you know, like, no. And so then the scene where June and decides to leave and Janine comes out to say goodbye. I love that scene. That was my favorite scene of the episode. The way Elizabeth Moss was playing it. She's like, okay, whatever. Yeah. I had a feeling you'd feel that way. She's not making eye contact. She looks really pinched off and upset. And Janine's like, I guess this is it. And June's just looking at her map. Yep. And I'm like, no, June, don't be stubborn and let it end like this. You know, I mean, I get it because I've been in situations like that too, where you your relationship with someone is having a problem and you feel hurt and closed off and you don't want to open up to them. But then when she did open up and hug her, I was so relieved by that. and she said, I need you to take care of yourself. Okay. And I, both times I watched, felt myself welling up, just really emotional, which I love when a show makes moves me like that. And then Janine gives her the Cubs hat, which was sweet. And, you know, something to remember me by. How could I forget you? Who could forget the girl with one eye? I think you're beautiful. It's just a really touching scene.
It was. We've been on such a journey with them.
Yeah. From the beginning. Yeah. And we don't want it to end that way.
No.
With June just going, I don't care. Just I'm leaving. Bye. That would be really heartbreaking. So that was an interesting, and then I'm like, okay, so is that it for Janine? Like, we just went through this whole thing this season where she's the one handmaid who's left, and now this is where they say goodbye. So it was really interesting, the whole scene that we already talked about where you think she's going to be attacked, but it ends up being Janine. Oh, she's back already. And she says, I feel safer when we're together. And I'm like, really? And again, that's being her being impulsive again. Like, she had all these dreams of being a mom, and now she's going to be with Steven and have a baby. But as soon as she feels like, no, oh, June leaves, I don't like this feeling, I'm going to go chase after her. So she just on a whim. I was glad she did for a second, but then, you know, they get bombed and she may be dead. I don't think she is, because they didn't show her. So I would think we would see that. Who knows? But I hope not. And I don't think so. But the show, just the season especially, just keeps hammering at home that you're not safer when you're with June. That seems to be a big theme of this season.
Yeah.
Even in this episode, when Nick sees these Marthas and asks if they have information on June, the first one goes, fuck June Osborne. A lot of brave women died trying to protect her. Even everyone that helps her ends up on the fucking wall. So it seems like more and more people are having that opinion about June this season, which is really interesting to explore.
I thought it was hilarious when Daphne said she was the Rick Grimes of the Handmaid's Tale. Yeah. And it really feels like that. Like,
yes,
everywhere she goes, you know, planes with bombs seem to appear.
It's like that because too, that we're like totally behind her, you know. I mean, June's our girl and Rick is my favorite character on The Walking Dead, but if you take a step back, it's like, I don't know if I would want to hang out with that person. I might be dead.
Well, remember, and this is kind of a side point, remember when on The Walking Dead we got that Michonne episode that flipped around and showed us what Michonne would have been like had she met up with the Saviors and not with Rick's group?
Yeah.
And I've thought about, and another fan pointed out at one point that we love Rick's group because we've known them the longest. Like, we've got to know them. We don't really know. Well, and now we have an idea of Negan's like backstory, but we don't really know. I mean, if we had been seeing it from the other side, how we'd feel about it.
Well, you identify with the characters that you know. And what always comes up for me, and I hope I'm not spoiling too much here, but in Walking Dead, early on, Carol decided there was a sickness and people were really sick. And there were two characters, Karen and David, who were super sick. And Carol decided to kill them so that they wouldn't spread the sickness around.
Nope.
And because Carol was such a fan favorite, people stood behind her on that. And I remember saying at a convention, you know, I was critical of that. Like, yeah, I don't blame them for banishing her after that, because she did that without even talking to anybody about it. And this one woman was like, no, Carol's our girl. And I was like, what if Carol had killed Glenn instead? What if Glenn was the one that was sick? And she goes, that's different. Sometimes it's different just because you know the person. And so you want to stand up for them, you know?
For me, though, I get invested in what I call the auxiliary characters. The ones that are in the show, but maybe not top of mind. So that bothered me too when she did that, when she took them out, because it just didn't seem right.
I would hope so, especially after the pandemic.
But then she redeemed herself with Terminus. Like, that was,
He's had a lot of great moments where she saved the day, for sure.
She definitely has. And I prefer that Carol to the other Carol that we get to see.
I mean, it's like Rick and Carol. They both have their darkness and their questionable decisions, but they're great characters, both of them.
Yeah.
And June too.
I feel like that's one of the reasons why they're great characters. Because they're not perfect. They're not Superman, you know, superhero. June too. Yeah. June is a complicated person. I was angry at her when she wasn't being real with Janine during that scene. I was mad.
But it's
I'm
so
like,
real.
Stop it.
It's so such the thing that people actually do. You know? And the fact that she was able to soften and give her a hug was just such a relief.
June definitely had bitch face a few times in this episode. And I found myself just getting aggravated. It's like, June, I love you, but you got to stop.
It was so great when Janine said, you're pushy.
Yeah.
I'm used to that, they don't know you.
Right. Because she was very demanding. June was very demanding. Like, she wanted to go out on the run, and I'm thinking, yeah, I'm not sure that they can trust you to do that yet. You've just been there for a hot minute.
So Janine and June was my number two.
Awesome.
So I can just continue with this. I thought it was kind of, I don't know, gross when we heard Janine having sex with Steven and June looks over and Brad's just kind of staring at her.
Yeah.
And he was like, hey.
I mean, the only thing missing was his eyebrows going up and down.
Yeah.
Like, want to come over?
Yeah. So, you know, I tried to think like what that would feel like. They don't know these people. It has to feel really vulnerable and scary. But I did think that Janine was between doing what she needed to do to survive and kind of just being in this unrealistic vision of her staying and having a family with Steven in the middle of rubble.
That's what Janine in particular brings to that equation.
Yeah. I thought it was also pretty gross when June asked Steven, when do I get a gun? And he said, when you earn it.
That makes sense to me. Oh, earn. Okay. Yeah. I thought it meant more earnest trust, but you never know with this guy.
It could be both. Because I mean, he's not, you know, you can see him kind of fooling around with Janine and being sweet to her. And obviously Janine has learned some of his history and backstory. So it's not like it's a, it seems to be somewhat of a sincere relationship, or at least it's turned into that, but it's also
for now.
Yes.
You never know with him.
Exactly.
Yeah. Just, it could even just be for that 5 minutes. Like, I felt like he was sincerely having fun with her, but that doesn't mean that he's not going to turn around that very afternoon and go try to be with some other girl, you know?
I agree. And I thought that their group really seemed to be on survival mode, that they weren't really fighting. They were just trying to survive.
Yeah.
And that Steven recognized that June could likely get them all killed, which was true. Mm-hmm. When June got to the museum with Steven's group, she was looking at the guns. You could see she wanted a gun badly. She didn't have anything to trade for it. And then she said to Steven, what kind of resistance are you? And he said, the kind that survives. You know, they're not looking for a fight. They're just trying to get food and fuel. And Chicago's a, it's a cold weather city. I'm sure that, you know, fuel in the winter is really important. The scene where June and Janine say goodbye to each other, I agree, it was really touching. I really liked it a lot. They both did such a great job with it. But, you know, when Janine showed up again on the street, I immediately had this terrible feeling that that was it, that Janine was going to die in this episode. And I don't know if she did or didn't. We don't know, but they've spent a lot of this season building up Janine's character. And as we know, in a lot of shows, when you're building up a secondary character, it's usually to say goodbye to them. So I just, from that moment on, I was like, yeah, this is it for her. And in the final scene after the bombing, where June is looking for Janine, I just felt certain we were going to find her dead. And I'm really happy that to be surprised that we didn't.
Me too.
We might still.
Yeah.
I don't think so. Yeah. But yeah, we don't know.
Yeah. I hope not, because they have really built up her character wonderfully, and I'm really attached to her.
Me too.
I wondered, I guess in my head I was thinking, Janine said that, you know, she told June reasons why that she went to be with her. But I'm wondering, too, if it was Janine realizing that June might need her to be like a conscience and talk her out of things that are a little bit dangerous, because June has a tendency. I mean, she wants an Uzi and she wants to be Rambo. I mean, to me, that's how it feels, is she just wants to go out and start like blowing things up and doing things. And I think Janine balances that out.
Well, I was thinking about that episode that I was the most critical of this season, where June was recaptured. And I was thinking, I think one of you guys or one of the listeners already mentioned this, but maybe one of the big reasons for that was so that she could have that encounter with Hannah and realize, okay, maybe with the situation that it is, Hannah's scared of me. Every time she sees me, it traumatizes her. Maybe it's better to just let go of that. And so that freed up June to be okay with putting herself in danger, which, and just fully giving herself over to just being this rebel. And it is dangerous. You know, I don't feel too critical of June, especially if she wants to find a group of like-minded people, these Nighthawks who don't mind putting themselves in danger. Mm-hmm. That's what it takes to be an effective freedom fighter.
She really doesn't appear to be interested in getting out or getting to Canada.
Yeah.
She wants to fight.
She wants to make an impact.
Yeah. She wants to take Gilead down.
Mm. Yeah. And it's hard not to just be like, yes, you go, June, 100% behind you. I just don't want her. She sometimes makes these decisions. Like, she wanted to take out that when they hid in that little cafe on the way to the trading post. She wanted to go out and take them out. And Stephen actually was the voice of reason saying, and what happens if they don't check in? They're going to send more soldiers. There'll be more people looking around. We could be found.
But that's what you have to do. If you want to make an impact, you got to face that danger. So he's right for him, because he wants to survive.
Yeah.
But I mean, on the other hand, where June really fucks up, in my opinion, is she gets people involved, and not only does she not let them know how dangerous it could be, because maybe she's in denial herself, but she even lies about it. We're going to be fine. That's bad.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what she thinks she has to do or whatever. But when you're telling people that, and just, you've already gotten several people killed and you keep saying it, then it's like, no, not so much. You know, like I think I said this last week or some other week, if she were to say, look, this is my mission, it's really dangerous. If you want to join me, you may die, but if you want to, then come on. If not, I understand. But who knows, maybe she couldn't get anybody to join her if she did that. I don't know. I mean, I'm pretty judgmental of her for like even telling Janine, we're going to be fine, we're going to be fine. Janine is like, how do you know that?
Right. I liked when last week when Janine pushed back and was like, don't treat me like a mushroom. Like, that's probably one of my favorite lines from this season as a whole, is don't treat me like a mushroom. I'm not even sure if that's exactly where her exact words.
She just
words,
said, I'm not a mushroom.
That because
and we're like, oh, okay.
I'm not a mushroom. I like that line because it's kind of clever, and I like the way Janine used it, because I do think June has been really delicate with Janine, treating her kind of like she's a little fragile at times. Well, because she kind of is. But I like the Janine that we've seen over the last 2 weeks, and I really hope that we get to see this Janine again, because she already was one of the characters I liked the most, but she's quickly becoming one of my absolute favorites, because I like the growth we've seen in the last few episodes.
Yeah, me too. Absolutely. You mentioned this guy, Brad, the guy that seems to have a crush on June. And I, you know, obviously she's not interested. She already has Nick and Luke. She has two lovers, but also it's just a shitty environment for that. This group led by a man who extorts women for sex. So she doesn't know who she can trust. And, you know, I'm thinking, is this guy just acting nice, but would rape her given the chance? You don't know. And so she's not interested, but she has to be careful how she turns him down because he may be violent. So she's like, I appreciate it though. And I'm like, wow, I think this show may be giving me a better feeling of what it's like to be a woman in general around yes. guys.
You yes. know? It's so true. It's yeah, it's so it's true. Awful. And I think she doesn't appreciate it, by the way.
No. Right. But she just doesn't want any trouble.
Right. She doesn't have any backup here.
Yeah.
It's just her and Janine all alone. And they don't know these people. They don't know what they're capable of.
I mean, I just sort of had this vision of yeah. maybe you, either one of you being in the library and having some weird guy who may be fine, but maybe not come up and say hi. And you're like, oh shit. How do I handle
Well, and
this?
It's usually not in the library. It's usually when you're alone somewhere. Mm. And that's when you feel really vulnerable. And I'm just, you know, going off of when I was younger. But, you know, that's when you feel really vulnerable and you just don't know, especially if it's someone you don't know what they're capable of.
Yeah.
And that can be a scary feeling. And he turned out to be a pretty decent guy, maybe. You know, like, yeah, I mean, yeah. from what we saw, he yeah. was helping her and he didn't have to. He was just helping her because he appeared to want to help her. And that's when she kind of let her guard down a little bit and said, hey, by the way, I'm June.
Yeah. I mean, he was helping yeah. her with directions, but he did mm-hmm. say, if you come back by, look me up. So his mind is still on that, mm-hmm. you know, like he still felt like he was angling.
maybe not
yeah,
but he wasn't walking up to her and saying do this, you know, like he's not saying, oh, I'll come with you if you do this, or, you know, trying to bribe her the same way that, or be like Stephen was when she got there, well, you can stay if you do this.
Yeah, he's, I mean, like you mentioned, he said you got to earn it, and my thought just went, well, if you're in a fighting group like this, you can't just give every new person a gun until they've shown you can trust them. But it could have been a sexual thing. But what, well, he
let Janine have a gun.
Well, did she earn it? Yeah, I guess you're right. But
well, Janine did earn it. Maybe you're right. Janine did earn it. Think about it.
Well, think about it. He was teaching her how to.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yeah. Good point. But I mean, yeah. also he said, you know, fresh meat needs to stay here. If you are in any yes. doubt about his character, which I'm sure no one is, but he's a total douche.
Yeah.
Well, my number two has nothing to do with Janine and June. It actually has to do with Lawrence and his little chess game that he's playing. There's something about him, though, that makes me want to chuckle when he achieves one of his little stepping stones. But then there's the part of me that's like, but I don't know if I can trust him, because I feel like I don't know what his purpose or his final game plan is, really, truly. So I can't really trust him. And then he kind of like blindsided Nick.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm confused.
I mean, I'm really confused, like, as to what his final plan is. But I like that in this episode, the way he handled Lydia, the way he flipped it around on her, not allowing her to blackmail him, but flipping it and making it be, well, with your help, I could do this. And if I do this, then I'll be in a better position to do this for you. And at the end of the episode, we see that Lydia is back out with the handmaids. God help him.
And Lawrence is back on the council.
Yes, he is.
And he appears to have blackmailed well, here's the thing. So Lawrence, it was his idea to have a ceasefire along these fronts and send aid in. And he says that's because there's economic sanctions on Gilead from all the other countries, and he wants to sort of take the high ground in the hopes that they can reach a deal where they'll lift some of these sanctions. But you get the impression that that's all just cover because he really wants to protect June, because he's talking to Nick and Nick says June isn't in Chicago, which he's wrong. But then he's like, well, how would you know? Would your heart start glowing or something like that? I love that. Yeah. But then, so you get the feeling, I'm like, okay, are they both just trying to protect June? I mean, Nick, he voted to keep the war going when he thought June wasn't there. So he seems to not care about anything else. Who cares if people die? I just care about June. But you get the sense that Lawrence cared about June. And then Lawrence blackmailed everybody to let him back on the council. And then it seems like, you know, because Nick brings up now that he's found out from the Marthas that June is there, now he's on board with the ceasefire. So he brings it up in the meeting and they're like, oh, yeah, we're thinking the same thing. And so I'm thinking, oh, I guess Joseph also blackmailed them to come around to his idea on the ceasefire. But then they say, yeah, we're going to have the ceasefire, but then we're going to come in and bomb them before the ceasefire is over. And Nick's confused by that. And so am I, like, because they did bomb them and June could have easily died. She was right there. It was a miracle that she didn't. So what up with Lawrence? Like,
I took it that he was not protecting June.
Yeah, I guess not. Clearly not.
Yeah, right? I don't think he's interested in protecting June. I almost feel like he thinks she's collateral damage at this point. Mm. And although he told Lydia he would hand her over, but if she dies, he can't hand her over. So that kind of absolves him of that as well. It was not clear to me. Does he just not care about June, or is he just trying to fuck Nick over because they're in a power play? It wasn't clear, but I don't think he was concerned about
it. Was a June. Twist though, because I think we were meant to think that he was until that moment at the end. But also I'm confused because the idea that he came up with about the sanction, about the ceasefire, was to help with the sanctions. At least that's what he said. And so if they have a ceasefire and then they break it and kill innocent people along with insurgents, that's not going to help at all with the sanctions. So I guess maybe it's just like, no, they think this is a better way to speed up their victory in war.
Well, they weren't breaking it because they were going to bomb the areas of insurgency just before the ceasefire started.
I know they said before it ended. I thought that's what they said.
I don't think so, because it's a 24-hour ceasefire that I assume started when we saw Mara. So we're going to have 24 hours of a ceasefire. And just before that, they did the bombing, which will not be looked on favorably, but technically is still adhering to the ceasefire.
Yeah. That's how I took it as well, Wendy.
And I think Lawrence, you know, did that for a reason. I think he orchestrated that and did it for a reason. It's a little unclear to me what the reason is. Like, is he trying to kill June? Is he just trying to curry favor with the other commanders? Is he just trying to get, you know, back on top? It was a little confusing and I had to kind of break it down, but that's what I thought was happening.
It will not surprise me if by the end of this season, he is sitting at the head of the table.
It's confusing, the wording to me. It says, he says, Commander Blaine, you will coordinate an aerial bombardment on all insurgent fronts just prior to the ceasefire deadline.
Right.
So does the ceasefire deadline...
That's when it starts.
When it starts or when it ends?
I think when it starts.
Because it says, with respect, any civilians moving to receive aid will be vulnerable. So they're moving into their starting position. Because
they know the ceasefire is going to start. Mm-hmm. Also, I assumed that the reason why the Nighthawks weren't in their... where they normally were, was because somehow Nick... Or someone else, but I thought probably Nick got word to them that the bombing was going to happen, because they just bugged out. They left their food and everything there.
When they said soldiers, I thought maybe that was the Gilead soldiers.
I don't think so. I think that was where the Nighthawks were. That's where June and Janine were looking for them, and they found their food and their stash of stuff
but no one was there.
Because Steven said the last place he saw him was at a hospital.
Right.
So I thought that's where she was going.
Right. And that's what I thought, because you could see it on Nick's face as soon as they said they were going to do the bombardment. Nick looked really concerned.
Oh, so you think he got the info to them?
I think so.
That's interesting.
And maybe we'll find out. It would be It would be nice to get some clarity on that.
Yeah, it's kind of confusing, but it sounds like, yeah, I think you could totally be right.
Yeah.
Nick's face when Lawrence appeared from behind the chairman.
That was great. That's just a great
That might be the only expression I've seen different on his face.
Hey, he finally had a different expression.
I'm like, oh. Because he had no idea. Like, he talked to Lawrence hallway.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's clueless as to what's going on with Lawrence and Lydia, Team L&L, and what their debauchery is going to bring forth.
How the hell did Nick get on, like, the main council that figures out the war strategy?
Remember, there's a lot of dead commanders in the middle.
A lot of dead commanders. So. Yeah. Like the handmaids, they have to replenish. So they're just pulling them in.
Major promotion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right place, right time. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm interested to see where this goes with Lawrence. I go back and forth in every episode. Do I like him? Do I not like him? What is he doing? Now I just feel like I have to wait and see what his actual end game is, because I just don't know. Like, I'm not sure.
I like him and he's interesting, but
yeah,
I'm not sure I don't think he's committed to June.
No, he's always been confusing kind of like, where is your head at?
Yeah. I actually think he has this vision of making things better in Gilead. Like, it makes sense. He says that, you know, the rest of the world is afraid of the Gilead military. That's what they have going for them, but they're causing a chokehold because of the sanctions, the economic sanctions they've placed on them. So he's trying to compromise to become, you know, you can't cut yourself off from everybody and still survive in this global economy.
No, you can't. He knows that.
And I thought that was really realistic to the world. So I really liked that part of it. And I think he says to Lydia, I think he says, let's fix this country. Let's make things right again together. And I think he really believes that.
But even if you're not technically breaking the terms of the ceasefire, if you bomb a place just before it's supposed to start and end up killing civilians, isn't that not really going to help you with your bid to be diplomatic and take the high ground to end the sanctions? I don't get that part.
I get what you're saying, but that's in our history, not ours in the United States, but that's world history right there.
But just see, if I was the head of another country and I was like, oh, look, they're reaching out an olive branch here. Let's see how it goes. And then they kill my civilians. I'm like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah. It's like it is a big chess game.
Yeah.
It is a big chess game. And I'm down to see what he does next. I think he's an interesting character for sure.
To me, that seems more like a play to lull the enemy into a place of vulnerability so you can strike and do some damage.
Yeah, it was the Tet Offensive in Vietnam that was done during a ceasefire so Vietnam could celebrate the Tet holiday, which was a spiritual holiday.
I'm sure during that they weren't trying to gain Vietnam's favor. You know, they were just trying to strike them and do damage.
Well, it was actually North Vietnam that used that time period to attack us.
Got it.
Which was kind of the turning point of the Vietnam War. So,
yeah, no, I understand the use of that to strike a vulnerable enemy, but not to try and be diplomatic.
Yeah.
All right. Well, does anyone else have anything more to say about Commander Lawrence and his secret plans?
Nope.
Then we can move on to, I believe, Jason, this is your number two.
Okay, I had a point about Lawrence, but we covered all of it. And we've covered a lot about my other point about June wanting to make an impact. But I just think it's interesting to look at her mindset. She's trying to judge whether she can make the kind of impact she wants to make with the group that she ended up with. And the two things that led her to believe, no, I need to leave, is when they had a chance to kill some soldiers and Steven didn't do it. And also she finds out about this other group that does kill soldiers. So that's basically all I have to say. Like, I can see in her mindset, like, nope, this isn't the group for me. They're losers. I'm going to go with this other group. So now we get to see, I don't know if she's going to meet the Nighthawks. I would presume that we will see the Nighthawks at some point, but at the end of the episode,
they spent a lot of time talking about them.
Yeah.
Maybe the Nighthawks will save Janine.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe Janine will end up with them and June won't, or something like that.
Yeah.
Twist. But we might as well talk about what happened at the end there, which was that out of the mist comes Moira.
Oh, this is my number one.
That was like, whoa, holy shit. Cool. I want to see what happens. I mean, I guess it seemed a little crazy that she would be there at the war front. I guess Chicago's up north, close to Canada.
It is. Right?
Yeah.
I should know that.
It is.
And she's volunteering in different respects, just with whatever has to do with Gilead. But before, it seemed more like coordinating things with refugees. But here it's like much more intense. So it was a surprise and a bit of like, really, would she really be there? But anyway, I was mostly just happy to see them reunited after all this time.
I was definitely surprised.
I thought it was interesting to see June's face, because we know, seeing what June went through, that she's not the same June that she was when Moira was able to escape.
She hasn't seen Moira in years.
Yeah.
And a lot has happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I just got the feeling when she was looking at Moira, it was kind of like, is that Moira? I know her, but that's like another life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, you remind me of someone. Like, where do I know you from?
And what about that Coldplay cover to Fix You, the song?
It was great.
That was incredible. I had to go and look it up because I like the song anyway, and I'm not a huge fan of Coldplay, but that one song I really like. It was a cover by a band called Fearless Soul, and I just thought it was appropriate. Like, Moira is always cleaning up June's messes. How appropriate that they're playing this song. It's about trying to fix somebody who's having problems, and Moira runs into June, and then they leave us there, and it was like they ripped my heart out, and then I had nowhere to go with it after.
Schitt's Creek,
yeah, because I don't like to, I can't talk about it because I try to save everything for the podcast. So I try not to even talk about the episode with anybody.
It's very painful not to have anyone to talk to.
It is.
Well, you should just wait to watch the next one until next week.
You're right, but I'm watching this one at 7:30.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to do the same thing. Because
I'm so used to it after all this time.
Yeah.
I guess I don't really think about it, but I do look forward to the chance to get to talk about it with you guys, though, for sure.
Yeah, it's like therapy, I guess, to talk through everything. And then it kind of validates some of the feelings, and it also brings to light some of the other stuff that I may have missed, because I like to watch it twice. It's become part of my plan to watch it the same day that we record too. Because then it's really fresh in my head. And I also miss things the first time through.
Absolutely.
So to go back and watch this one again,
a second watch really helps you to find things early on that you may have missed because you didn't know the ending, so that are leading up to the ending.
Yeah, because I still think that there's got to be some reason And maybe I'm off about this, but I think there's some reason that Janine has learned to shoot a gun. I could be wrong. There could be nothing.
I hope you're right. I just fear that
it'll come in handy.
I have to think that because this show has been so thoughtful in planting seeds as it goes, that I don't know.
Before Mara appeared, did you think we were going to find Janine dead?
Yes.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
I was scared. Okay. All right, don't do this.
I'm sure that's what they wanted you to.
Yeah, or hurt. We were all looking for Janine there. So to have Moira pop up. Holy shit.
Yeah, that was
I actually thought I was being probably a rose-colored optimist like Janine, but I was like thinking she was going to have a broken leg or something.
Okay.
Yeah. I wasn't sure.
Yeah, we can't really count on her being alive, but I'm just
hopeful. Yeah, I have to have a little bit of hope. I feel like they would show us her body or there would be something.
I think we'll find out in the next episode.
I hope so.
I hope so. Not like in season 9 or something.
Yeah.
No. Okay, Wendy, what's your number one?
So my number one was just more of everything we've already talked about, was the politics and the backstabbing in Gilead. I had some notes on Aunt Lydia. I think we've covered it all. I just thought it was really interesting to see a younger Aunt Ruth putting Lydia in her place and letting her know it's her time to rest. And Lydia is not going to be put out to pasture.
No. She'd cranked up the treadmill after that.
Yes.
Yeah.
You could just hear dee, 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 dee.
Yeah.
Ruth talks about her in the past tense. She says, I admired your devotion when you were active. And, you know, Lydia's just still in fighting mode. I thought that was great. And I just wanted to end it with how much I hate Nick.
Nick, even if feeding information to the rebels, that makes me like him a little more, if that's true.
Yeah, he was so arrogant in here. Like, I feel like we're getting more personality from him. I just don't like his personality.
He's like, go back to being one expression.
I like him less.
He's in the new Saw movie, by the way.
Yes, I saw that. I saw the trailer.
I'm hoping to see it this weekend.
He states that if Dune was at the border, he would know about it. He's so arrogant. Then he orders two Marthas dragged into a van and has them shipped to him to get information on Dune. They probably had no idea where they were going or what was going to happen to them. I mean, we all know putting a woman in a van is not a good thing. So that made me upset and pissed off at him. And then Lori says, that was one of the Marthas, everyone who helps June ends up on the wall. And Nick says, I know, I'm sorry. I just hated him here.
I love hearing you say that. It's so much fun. I'm reserving judgment until I see exactly what he's up to, because I know it's hard to operate in Gilead, and maybe he's doing the best he can. And if he really does have the goal of helping the rebels, then maybe that's the best he can do, you know, given the constraints.
I agree. I think we're meant to think that there's a long game. And I see a lot of people very married to the idea of June and Nick. You know, I see a lot of people online talking about it. But I have to say, I thought it was very telling that in the very beginning of the episode, June is having a flashback. And it's not of Nick. It's of Luke.
That's a good point.
And I thought that was telling. She's not dreaming about Nick.
Mm-mm.
And I also liked that what prompted that clearly was her hearing Janine have sex with Steven.
Yeah.
And it's not the same kind of, like, I'm sure she was just trying to drown that out with her own vision or something. Like,
yeah.
Or it just she wasn't makes like, you oh, how romantic. But it just about, made you think about it. Yeah.
Think about past times. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When people touched you for, you know, out of love, out of care, out of
intimacy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad it was. If that had been her thinking about her and Nick, I might have just thrown up in my mouth a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to think though, that whatever Nick's long-term plan is, the day's going to come where he's going to have to make a decision. one side or the other. You can't keep playing both sides if that's what really what he's doing.
He may have made that decision, but he's, you know, doing, he feels like he can do the most good in a position of power on the enemy side, maybe.
True. I really would like us to get his backstory of his involvement in the bombing at the Capitol, because it's been alluded to that he was involved in the initial bombing. I'd really like,
I think we have some surprises to find out about him. And I'm looking forward to that.
I want to find it out soon, though. I don't like being strung along with this kind of mystery for too long.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I feel like they gave us a little bit of Janine, so I'm happy. Thank you. Can we please have a little bit of Nick now, just so that we can get a few little nuggets to help me make up my mind? Because I'm not on the June Nick bandwagon for life, love, and happiness at the end of this show.
Yeah, I'm definitely not a June Nick shipper. I'm an anti-June Nick shipper, but I'm not like anti-Nick as a person yet.
I want to see what happens, but I'm not feeling really great about him this whole season.
Yeah.
That's it for my number one.
Well, my number one, we talked about already a little bit, and that was really basically the last couple minutes of the episode. June realizing something was going wrong, the plane was coming, that her and Janine running away, and the aftermath of her getting up, yelling for Janine, and seeing Moira. And to me, and I know I've already said this, it just seemed like she knew who she was, but she didn't know. It's like that was another lifetime. Like, you know, you have, what is it called? Not the nine lives of a cat, but, you know, like past lives. Like that was a whole other lifetime for her. Because it's been years. Yeah,
there's a question of how they'll relate now. Or like when you see someone that you knew in third grade and they're like, I wonder if we'll be friends now. There's no guarantees, even though you were best friends back then.
Yeah, they're different people.
Mm-hmm. They are. And
it doesn't take long to change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But sometimes you can be surprised. Like I have met people back and like, oh, wow, we're still vibing. That's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think look at how things are just in the last year with the pandemic that we've had. I feel like I've changed as a person in the last year, and I'll look at things differently once we get out of it. I think for Moira, I think Moira still feels guilt. I think we've seen that in previous episodes where she feels like she has to clean up June's messes because she left her behind and she was able to get out. And I think one of the reasons Moira is down there is her girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Goes and does things. She said something about Thunder Bay, and I believe Thunder Bay is near the border-ish area, across the border into Canada. So I'm wondering if that's why she was there. Is she took her up on that offer to go and just...
That's what I thought.
To help out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But I think it was interesting for Moira to actually see June and just be... like not believing her eyes, kind of. This is, you know, it's kind of coincidental that they end up in the same place at the same time. However, I'll let it go because.
Yeah.
With this show, it has a purpose.
It happens like in Star Wars, people end up on the same freaking planet and they see each other.
So I just really liked the last few minutes of this episode. I thought that the music tie-in and the way that it was shot, the acting was all pretty incredible. And it made me just want more right then.
Yep.
So, Jason, what's your number one?
We already covered all my points.
All right. Does anyone have any notes?
I have a couple notes. One thing I thought was interesting is Steven's group had a bunch of military MREs. That's what they were eating and that's what they were planning on trading.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing I thought was interesting is that we saw early in the episode, we saw June was washing her red handmaid's cloak in the bathtub. And I that kind of like made me confused. I was like, why on earth would you want to keep that? But then later, they trade Janine and June trade their cloaks for the baseball cap. And when they ask Janine what she has, she says, "That's all I have." And that kind of brought it home to me. Like, that's probably their only possession.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it made me think they should have maybe snagged some extra clothes when they had the chance to grab all those clothes earlier.
Yeah.
But the MREs, maybe that came from the train. I don't know.
Yeah. It did come from the train.
Yeah. I thought that was interesting. And another note I have is that Lydia, when she was blackmailing Lawrence, she stated that she has testaments of Commander Lawrence's misdeeds. And I thought that was a nod to Margaret Atwood's novel Testaments, which is the sequel to Handmaid's Tale. So I thought that was really interesting. And then my last note was just something I thought that was funny is Janine asks June if the Nighthawks will accept them. And June says, "They fucking better." I like that.
June gets a little feisty sometimes.
Yeah. She's so confident.
She's like, "What? They kill soldiers. I want to kill soldiers. What more? What do they want?"
Right. I killed a commander with a pen.
Right. Yeah, do not underestimate June Osborne. Some have and have not lived to tell the tale.
Yeah.
We covered all of my notes.
Me too.
So we'll take a break. There's more to come. Stay with us.
This is my kind of town. Chicago is my kind of town. Chicago is my kind of people too, people who smile at you, and each time I roam.
And we're back with some listener feedback. I can take the first one from our friend Barbie Allen. "Wow, so much to digest and sort out. Lawrence is wheeling and dealing with Lydia and Nick. I still believe Lawrence and Nick are trying to look out for June, but the Chicago air raids felt a lot like Negan attacking Hilltop with the Whispers."
That's so true.
That's a great point. "Yeah, they have to play along with Gilead to try and work things in June's favor behind the scenes, but it's not going as they'd hoped. Lawrence could have done better in his negotiations with the commanders, damn it. And can someone please tell me why One-Armed Warren has a seat at the table and a voice in anything?" You're damn right, Barbie. I don't get it either. "I hope Janine is somehow okay, but thinking about all the heartfelt stuff she got to say to June now feels like last words, especially handmaids always travel in twos." Still, no body, no proof of death. Will June go back with Moira, or somehow convince Moira to stay and fight for what's left of the U.S.? Really good episode. Can't wait to hear your thoughts.
I wouldn't be surprised if they end up choosing to separate. You know, I don't think June's going to go back to Canada.
I don't think June's going to have the option to go back. I could be wrong.
You don't think she's going to have the option?
No, because it's a ceasefire. So I think that's going to be controlled somehow. Huh. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I'm interested to see.
And but I don't think she would want to anyway.
No, she's not going to go back to Canada and be mom and live happily ever after.
She's not the June that we met early on. I mean, she's just not.
June already chose not to go back to Canada once before.
Yep.
Yeah. Which we know Luke has dealt with. I mean, I really feel for Luke dealing with that. Wendy, you want to take the next one?
Alma Contreras says, "I thought this episode was pretty good. Do y'all think Janine is dead?" I think we covered that.
I hope not. Fingers crossed.
I don't think so, but I have no idea. Penny Lennox says, "Woke up early to watch before work. Worth it."
Definitely. So our next batch of feedback is for previous episodes, mainly covering episode 4, which is Milk. Paul Robinson says, "Hi, guys. You asked about men who listen to the podcast and watch the show. So greetings from the UK. Love the podcast. Love the Walking Dead cast. I really need help getting through Fear." Well, Paul, I hope that Jason and his co-hosts are able to help you process through those feelings. My thought was that there's been a few weird looks from Aunt Lydia. First in her hearing and then in June's torture. Could she turn, but in a twisted way, against the men of Gilead? She seems to thrive on the power she has over the handmaids, but has seemed to have had enough of all the bullshit the men come out with. Could she end up running everything? Also agree with the point of being totally over Nick and Commander Lawrence, but could they be maneuvering the invasion into a diplomatic solution?
I mean, with you can't look at what just happened where planes came down and rained bombs down all around June and think anything but Lawrence just put her life in mortal danger. You know, it was just a miracle that she didn't die there.
Yeah. So I think he did that on purpose.
What else could you think? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, about Lydia maybe turning, that's an interesting thing. I mean, I feel like I don't think she's going to turn, but it is interesting because you're right. She does seem to see that all these men are hypocrites. So
I think she's getting over that. I think she is over the men.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's, but I don't know how she think how.
How could
this would
she
all come about?
Be so judgmental of these guys and see them for the hypocrites they are and yet still buy into the system of Gilead that was orchestrated mostly by the men, you know? Like,
see, I think she's just taking the what power she can grasp.
Yes.
It's what's in front of you. I don't know. That's my thoughts. Molly says, hi, all. Thanks for a fun podcast. I love discussing and hearing commentary on The
Handmaid's Tale and have been enjoying tuning into you guys. Thanks, Jason, especially for the male perspective. Not many of them out there, and I'm sure it requires a certain amount of courage, all things considered. I agree. Aww. I have one comment about episode 4, Milk. Occasionally, the show gives us an Easter egg in the form of a familiar plot construct. But this one was so obvious, I was shocked that none of the discussions I turned into picked it up. Where else have we seen a last glimmer of fertility smuggled through a radioactive hellscape in a tanker of mother's milk? That's right, Mad Max Fury Road.
Ooh.
Charlize Theron turns in my favorite female hero of all time as Furiosa. Am I saying that right?
You are.
Okay. I see the same cold-eyed, everything hurts out here strength in June, and the same we are not things pushback in the handmade resistance. Who killed the world? Keep up the good work.
That's a great call. I love that movie so much.
Me too.
It's one of my favorite. It's maybe my favorite action movie of all time. Definitely my favorite in the last several decades. Yeah. It's just so great, the whole thing, I think. But thanks for, you know, I was a little concerned about being a guy talking about this stuff, but so far it's been pretty cool.
Agreed. I'm glad that Molly pointed that out because I think as a trio, we're having a lot of fun bringing all of the points to light.
Yeah. Nicole Oye says, hi, I was thinking about Nick as you all were talking about his motivations around Gilead. While he's not my favorite personality, I get more of the vibe that he got himself in too deep and is not strong enough to correct anything. Maybe that will change as we go forward. We know he was crucial in the takeover and that according to Serena, Gilead would not exist if not for what he did. Exactly. That's why I think, I feel like it's an issue with the actor, to be honest, because I feel like the script treats Nick like he's more imposing than the feeling I get from the way the actor plays him. I don't know if I'm reading that right, but that's just my feelings about it. Nothing against the guy. I'm sure he could do great in a role more suited to his personality, but that's just my feelings about him. Anyway, she goes on, when June wanted him to speak on Nicole's behalf, he said something about not wanting to get involved with the government because you can't get out once you're in. So it seems like he would be a big time war criminal outside of Gilead and might feel like he doesn't have a choice now. Yeah, I think you're probably right about that. I think at first he was just so sold on having a purpose and being needed. And he's starting to wake up now that someone he cares about is being impacted. Yeah, there's some wisdom in all that.
Well, Jason, I'm hoping to see the, what is it? Spiral this weekend. I will let you know if the actor has any additional expressions.
Right. If he has
or
some
tone
range
in his voice. Yes. I will let you know on that.
Cool.
It's funny when they had the episode that where the Swiss came in being all neutral and June arranged for Nick to talk to them and then they didn't want anything to do with him. It leads me to believe he did something really big. Like, this isn't just he threw a bomb at a building. He was really involved.
Yeah, I hope we find out.
Me too. Okay, Evan Shapiro says, watching Milk and only 5 minutes in, I already have so many violations of my suspension of disbelief. Why jump in the milk vat rather than hide in the back of a military truck? Why are there lights inside a milk tanker? Why is there a drain that is activated from the inside of the tanker? So far, so bad. Still gonna watch more. The prior episodes were so good. Not gonna give up now. Have to assume it's stilted to set up the rest of the episode. Those are interesting points.
Yeah, we kind of talked about all that stuff last week. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fran Bernstein, hi Fran, says, hi Daphne, Wendy, and Jason, praise be. So good to hear your voices together. Episode 4, Milk, was the best so far. I loved it. Seeing Janine's backstory was great. She was a regular single mom working as a waitress who made a choice to terminate her pregnancy. No real drama, just making a choice she had a right to. June sees her as weak when in reality, Janine is pretty strong. Then when she made the choice to give sex with Steve, again, a choice she made to protect June, I wasn't expecting it at all. And oh my God, Rita, I just love her. She will not help Serena. I was so glad. And I loved her celebration with sushi and Diet Coke. I would have had the same. Such a great, strong woman who isn't a June episode. And on another note, I love that in the last podcast, you mentioned Nip Tuck, one of my all-time favorite shows, which I am in the middle of rewatching. That's great. Thank you, Fran.
We got to have a conversation about that, Fran. I have not watched that in a long time, but I really did like that.
Good to hear from you, Fran, by the way.
Yeah.
Lindsay Schlicht says, Lindsay's a long-time listener to all this stuff, by the way. Yeah. This episode felt so heavy to me for some reason. The argument in the milk truck was vicious. Felt like they both said things that you could never take back. Then how it must have felt for them to finally think they've escaped and gotten a mayday only to find out it's just another group of shitty violent men was so upsetting. When it seemed like June was going to be raped again, I considered maybe that being enough for me with this show. Like, just how much more can they do to these women? I'm really glad Janine was able to finally prove her ability to be a partner for June rather than a burden. I've suspected for a long time that Janine would prove to be another badass, and I'm glad we're finally seeing that. Yep, I agree on all that. I'm glad.
Absolutely.
I'm glad June didn't go through with that, and the way it all turned out was great.
I think what I liked about that scene where it seemed like she might, and then she was, then she finally was just like, couldn't do it, was that she was so strong throughout so many things that she had to deal with. And this was just like she could not do it. That was it.
And it was similar to the moment with Winslow too.
Yeah.
So that's why I was kind of thinking this guy was going to get his penis bitten off.
Yes.
Which would have been good too.
It would have been good. There may have been some cheers over that one. JC Harris said, this episode felt really heavy. Even when Janine proves she is a partner, not a burden, it was in a way that felt awful and heavy, not like, yay, go Janine. Probably useful in the sense that they can get their bearings and find out where to go from here, but damn, just what a place to end up. June and Janine are both badasses, though, so they will figure this out and hopefully get the hell away from there.
Well, they got away a little ways away.
Yeah, down the street.
LW says, I kept hoping June would tell them that they are 15 or so commanders who are dead, hospitalized, and not at the Chicago front because she poisoned them. And maybe that's worth a couple of sandwiches, but no.
That's a good point.
That is a great point.
Tracy Walker says, I loved all the Jeanine backstory. Once again, Handmaid's Tale hit home that this is not some distant future or backwards nation, that it happened not only in the United States, but in the educated, primarily liberal Northeast. I admire Jeanine stepping up as the strong one, but in sense that yet another dickhead man was calling the shots. You know, that video I mentioned that I posted at facebook.com/podcastica about the map of Gilead, it mentioned that back in the 80s when this book was written, that the Northeast was more conservative. So that might have something to do with that being the center of Gilead. But I don't know.
That is true, because I'm from New England, and I do think that we've become much more liberal over the last 30 years. So that definitely makes sense. So Matthew Villarond says, I can't stand June anymore. Her choices got people killed, and when called out on it, she acts like a bully. I should have left you a long time ago.
It's got to be tough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kelly Burgess says, I've been meaning to say something since I listened to it last week. I wanted to say how much I appreciated how you covered the topic of abortion and the clinic that Jeanine went to first. I thought you all handled a sensitive topic very well. I really appreciate when you don't shy away from those topics, but approach them with care, sensitivity, and respect. Loving all of your coverage so far and can't wait for more. Thank you, Kelly.
Yeah, thanks, Kelly.
Yeah, it's really nice to hear stuff like that, because going back to when I first started covering Game of Thrones in season 5, and realized, oh my God, this show touches on some really sensitive subjects and they need to be handled with lots of care because people have feelings about this stuff. And so it's really nice to hear some appreciation for it. Makes us feel good.
Yeah. Thank you, Kelly.
Yeah. And I don't want to impose my faith and beliefs on other people, but I do think that the show goes to a lot of really sensitive, real world, current event topics. And I think we would not be doing the show justice if we didn't talk about them.
I agree with that. Totally.
Yeah.
Life's too short to just not address things.
Yep.
And you can always address it in a way, in a careful, tactful, considerate way.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we try to do.
Fuck yeah. No, I'm just kidding. I'm going to take that part out.
Leave it in. All right. So we have a couple of calls.
Yeah. So our first call is from Archmaester Rennie, who's also a longtime listener of this podcast and Game of Microphones before it. So I'm so glad you called in. And I haven't listened to this yet, so let's hear what she has to say.
All right.
Hello there, Podcastica crew. This is Mayday Rennie, also known as Archmaester Rennie. I want to say thanks for your coverage of the first 3 episodes. That was great. Episode 3, I think, is the most interesting episode so far, where Gilead is clearly portrayed as an analog to Nazi Germany, where the torturer is not a slavering, sadistic brute, but a bureaucrat with a clipboard. The banality of evil theme. And the subject of torture is put into situations where there is no good ethical choice that can possibly be made, so that any choice that the victim of torture, June in this case, makes is one that also is very destructive to her, even if she physically survives. I found that episode just really harrowing. In episode 4, I think there were a lot of appalling things in that episode as well, but the most appalling, the one that I was just stunned by, was the resistance group that June and Jeanine encounter, where there are men who are fighters and women who are fighters, and the leader of the group is this man who almost makes a joke about sex slaves in America, and then has June and Janine brought to him and wants to use them as sex slaves. And the thing that I was particularly horrified by is that there's a woman fighter standing right there with an assault rifle, and she seems completely unperturbed by the leader, this male leader of the group's decision to use these escaped women as sex slaves. What kind of a resistance group is this? Not any kind of resistance group that I would certainly ever want to join. So, very interested to see where they go from here. Thanks again for the coverage. Bye.
Yep. Can't argue with that.
So great to hear from her. I loved her feedback from Game of Thrones.
She actually guest hosted it.
Yeah, I listened to that one. Yeah.
Kristen, yeah.
It was great.
All right. And we have one more call from Lauren Bell.
This one has some light spoilers from the book, this Testament. So if you really don't want to be spoiled by anything from the Testaments, you should probably skip ahead.
All right. I'm skipping ahead. I'm just kidding. It's a minute and a half long. So if you want to skip to the end or just stop listening right now, now's your chance. But it's light, right? You said.
Yeah.
Okay. Here we go.
Hi, guys. My name is Lauren. I'm from Okinawa, Japan. I'm a short-time listener and a first-time caller. So I wanted to call because I have a theory. I have read the Testament's books, and obviously I watched the show, and I think Hulu has purchased the rights to Testament, so I think it's safe to say that we're headed in that direction. Anyways, when I was reading the books, I always wondered why Daisy was hidden. And I didn't ever feel like their answer to that was satisfactory. And so I was thinking about it, and I think that Serena Joy is pregnant with Fred's baby. And this will open up the possibility that Fred is Nicole's biological father. And so either they're going to do a DNA test and he is the father, and that'll prompt Mayday to hide her. Or, and I think this is more likely, that the fear of the possibility that he's the father will prompt them to whisk her away before it can be proven or disproven. And I think this is more likely, I think Nick's her father, because in the book, it includes a marking that names June, her daughters, and their fathers. And there's no way Fred's righty ass is surviving. If he doesn't die in a gruesome, horrific manner, I'm going to be very upset. So anyways, love the show. Thanks for including me if you do. Bye.
That's great.
Thanks for calling, Lauren.
From all the way from Japan. That's fabulous.
Yeah. She sounds like she's great. From like Wisconsin or something.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
I got the impression, and I tried looking that up just now, but I couldn't find it, but that they were planning on having Testaments air at some point while Handmaid's Tale is on. But am I wrong about that? Do either of you know?
I don't think there's anything firm in place about it yet, but I know it's in development.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I will say the book is a little spoilery, but it's assuming that, you know, that everything that's going to happen in this series is true to the book Testament. So it's a little spoilery, but it might not be. So it's really hard to say.
All right, that's our show. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Thank you, guys. And it's great to be getting a steady feed of feedback.
Yeah, it's great. Keep it coming.
Yeah, I love hearing what other people are thinking. Mm-hmm. And some of them just bring up points that I hadn't considered. So I really love it. So please keep calling and writing in with your thoughts.
Yeah, instead of writing a bad review for us on iTunes that we don't know something, just write in and tell us. That's how you do it.
Yeah. If you'd like to write in or record a message and send it in, you can email it to talk@podcastica.com.
Check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/podcastica.
And we also had facebook.com/housepodcastica, but those two have been merged. You can use either one of them, but they'll lead to the same place, which is facebook.com/podcastica. So that's now our webpage for all the shows on the Podcastica network, including this one. And we're also on Twitter at Podcastica.
Next time on the podcast, The Handmaid's Tale, Season 4, Episode 6, titled Vows.
Yeah, and I remember when the reviews started coming out, I was skimming through but trying not to be spoiled, and I just remember seeing that one review said some stuff we've been waiting for a long time happens in Episode 6. I don't know what that is, but makes me even more excited to watch it. I also wanted to mention that I mentioned my Patreon last time, and I didn't mention though that as part of, if you go ahead and pledge to the Patreon any amount, $2 a month or more, you get an ad-free version of this podcast. So if you're tired of hearing ads, that's another motivation to do it, and it's patreon.com/JasonCabassi. Thank you guys.
All right. As far as what we're doing on other podcasts, you can find me on my podcast, Run For Your Lives, that I do with my good friend Paik. Last week, we covered an episode on a movie called The Wandering Earth, which was China's first foray into the science fiction genre of movie, which was kind of cool. And this week, we are covering Cooties, which is... it's a trip, for sure. So, Jason, what have you got going on?
We're covering a show that this week managed to be even bleaker than Handmaid's Tale, and that's Fear the Walking Dead.
Oh, goodness.
And except without the artistic merit to match. So, but we had a, Rima and I co-hosted, and actually, I was really happy with how that episode turned out. And we got a lot of praise for it, too. So that was really nice. So if you're watching Fear already and you're not listening to us, I don't know. There's probably no one like that out there. But anyway, that's all on Walking Dead cast. I think unless they announce at this point that Fear Season 7, which has been approved, if they announce that's the last one, then I would consider covering it. But otherwise, if they don't, I think Season 6 will probably be the last season of Fear on Walking Dead cast. It's just, I've had enough.
I feel like they've got to make it infinitely better in the next few episodes.
Yeah, yeah,
and we'll just see. Don't see it. I don't know. I don't want to give up. I'm going to stay till the end, but oh my goodness.
You're making it hard. Stay till at least the end of the season.
Yeah, yeah. I'm definitely going to podcast throughout the next, it's only 4 more episodes, so yeah.
When you give up on it, then it turns good. That's my experience with the show.
I know. It's true. Yeah. There's some really good episodes in there. Yeah.
Yes.
You were going to come on with me for one of those, right?
Sure.
You want to?
Sure, okay. Yeah.
You guys both could.
Yeah, I'd love to. Okay. I'm not giving up on it yet. All right, that's our show.
Thanks for listening.
Have a blessed day.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.